Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Teddy Basham Witherington. It's so good to be with you here today. I'm looking out and seeing all of your faces, and I don't know why, but I'm always somewhat surprised when we get a turnout like this for General Service. So please give yourselves a big hand of applause. And when this happens and I look out and I see all of your faces, it gives me such hope and gratitude for the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the future of Alcoholics Anonymous is out there with you, with your groups and your districts and their hopes and dreams and fears for the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you for your service. It gives me a big, full heart of gratitude to be with you all today. As was mentioned, I got to serve our area as its delegate to the General Service Conference in panel 69. That was 2019 and 2020. So I had one General Service Conference in person and one General Service Conference online, literally 2 or 3 months into the pandemic. And we didn't know whether we could do it. We learned a ton that year. And of course, there was another one online the next year, which was where the decision was made to proceed with a plain language big book. But it didn't start there. And I'm going to talk about more in a minute. But, you know, what's Teddy doing up here, right? So I thought that second General Service Conference, that was it. I was done. I was rotated. Seems my higher power had more in store for me. I was elected to serve as a volunteer director on the AA Grapevine Board by the conference a few years later. And so that is my current service commitment. And I always call it a commitment. A service commitment is what we do in service, whether it's making the coffee at our home group, which is, as we all know, the most important service commitment in AA, wherever we find ourselves, I need to remind myself it's a commitment. It's not a position. It's not an office. It's a commitment, a service commitment to AA. The technical term is a non-trustee director, which sounds really weird, right? It kind of starts off by defining it by saying what it isn't. But that's all explained in the service manual. Something else that's also in the service manual that it might be easy to kind of overlook is that those non-trustee directors, those volunteer directors of AA World Services and AA Grapevine, part of our responsibilities is we also get to serve on committees of the General Service Board, otherwise known as trustee committees. It's been my privilege to serve on the Trustees Literature Committee last year and this year. It's April to April, it's conference to conference. I also got to serve on the Plain Language Big Book Subcommittee, also on the fifth edition subcommittee, which I'll refer to in passing later on. So let's get started here with this is going to be a presentation, so I'm going to put my glasses on so I stick to the script. So this is really about the origins of the Plain Language Big Book. So back in 2016, there was an agenda topic to consider developing a plain language version of the Big Book. I say it started there. It really didn't start there because the conversation had been happening for a long time before that. When the Big Book was when it was first published back in 1939, Dr. Bob thought that the language used was a little too sophisticated and wouldn't reach what he called blue-collar alcoholics. And so at his bidding, the Akron Intergroup created some pamphlets in plain language. And you can still get those today. They're called the Akron pamphlets, and if you go to the Akron Intergroup, you can find them for purchase there. So, well, it might seem like a new idea, but really it isn't. It's just an idea that whose time came. And the recent history started in 2016. So what happened after that was that a subcommittee was formed of the Trustees Literature Committee, and it looked at the literacy levels needed to comprehend our big book, reviewed what other materials we were already using in the fellowship, and concluded that there were some barriers related to education, ethnicity, English as a first language, reading disabilities, you know, brain injuries, and those kinds of things that presented barriers to people from understanding the text. So then in 2020 at the General Service Conference, the Conference Literature Committee, who got this report, requested that it be shared with the fellowship, and a report brought back the next year, noting the importance for this fellowship to be informed about the accessibility challenges with regard to our literature. And there was a video that was created, and some of you may have seen it, and I'll make this presentation available to everyone after today, and there's a link in here that takes you to that video. So that's what happened then. And then the next year, in 2021, it says, you know, what happened, part three. Strangely enough, there are 12 parts to this story. Kind of spooky. So be prepared. So the next year, in 2021, the Conference Literature Committee got the report and thought that there was a need driven by concerns around accessibility and relatability, and that the fellowship had indicated a desire or a need for a new plain language written book, one that wasn't meant to replace our beloved big book, but instead to kind of help with those barriers that we talked about earlier. So this was, like I said, the second conference that was held online. And I mention that because I don't know about your home group, but my home group, we were still struggling to find out, you know, what we were doing and how we were going to move forward. And now that we were online, was that it? And so on. So I kind of mentioned that because not everyone's eyes were on what the General Service Conference was doing in 2021. And that has kind of led to a thought in some areas that maybe all this happened, you know, in a way that wasn't transparent with the fellowship. But I hope with my presentation today you can get a full understanding of the history here and come to your own conclusions about that. So the conference decided that year that a draft version of our big book be translated into plain and simple language and be developed in a way that was accessible and relatable, and that a progress report be brought back the following year. So then what happened was the subcommittee, and, you know, we love our acronyms in AA. I'm not going to go into the acronyms today, but they're in the presentation. Let's just say a subcommittee of the Trustees Literature Committee worked with the publishing department at our General Service Office to review potential writers for the project. So a formal, what's called a request for information, was sent out for writers with experience in the fields of health, spirituality, self-help, or education, seeking someone who would be able to do a full plain language translation, and that translation be accessible to readers with a fifth grade reading level. Why fifth grade, right? you know, we don't endorse or you know, anyone else, but there are surveys out there that indicate that the literacy or reading grade level of the majority of adults in the USA is fifth grade. Shocking, I know, but that's what the research tells us. And then, but also, you know, not just that, but we wanted the translation to capture the welcoming and inclusive spirit of AA and inspire that sense of belonging and hope in the alcoholic still seeking help. And, you know, that's what I got when I read our basic text, and we didn't want to lose that in the plain language translation. So there were 16 responses to that request for information. And of those 16, six were chosen to translate chapter 5, How It Works, and a few other select passages. Now, the reason we do this, and this is true for every single translation that is done of the Big Book, before we proceed with the translation, we always ask the person who's going to be doing the translation to translate chapter 5 first. And then we review it to make sure that what they're doing is they are capturing the language of the heart that is there and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that is there in chapter 5 of our Big Book. So those samples were reviewed and a writer was chosen. The writer, it was recommended that we preserve the anonymity of the writer, as that was in everyone's best interest, and that the writer not be given any specific coaching until the review process, and I'll talk about that in a minute, because we didn't want to over-guide them in their work. So as some of you may know, the writer, and I can tell you this, is not a member of the fellowship. And some people found that surprising and questioned why that was so. All I can tell you is that when the RFIs came back, the members of the fellowship, how can I put this? I know I have my way of reading the Big Book as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not alone in that. And so what came back from members of the fellowship was something a little more tailored, I shall we say, to their understanding rather than what was actually written. So the decision was made to go with a person from outside the fellowship, but what would happen would be that this person would translate chapters and then send them back to the Plain Language Big Book Subcommittee. And then the members of the Plain Language Big Book Subcommittee, who were all alcoholics and also included members of publishing department, would review that the writer had translated and make comments and suggestions, and we would discuss those. From my perspective, when I became a character in this saga, chapters 1 through 6 had already been translated and reviewed, and so my attention was on the latter chapters and what we call the back matter, which is all the appendices and also Dr. Bob's Nightmare was one of the things that was translated. But I still reviewed chapters 1 through 6 because, you know, I was a member of the committee and I felt it was my duty to do so. And what I discovered in this process, which came as a surprise to me, was just how much I loved our basic text, just how attached I was to our basic text, and when not to stick to my opinions. There's a beautiful essay in the service manual called Leadership in AA, Ever a Vital Need. Some of you may have read it. It's attached to Concept 9, in which Bill W. describes all the attributes we look for in our leaders in service. And there's a piece in there that says, there are times, however, when we need to stick flat-footed to our convictions. And that was my experience. And I'm glad that I did that in this process. So that's just to kind of give you an idea of the very organic nature of what happened when we would get the translations from the translator, is we weren't just like stamping the passport of the translator. There was a very vigorous a very vigorous process of review of the translator's writing. So then, in 2022, some unedited samples of the translator's work were shared with all of the General Service Conference members. The Conference Literature Committee asked for another, a progress report or a draft manuscript to be brought back to the 2023 conference. So in 2023, everyone at the conference was given a chance to review chapters 1 through 6. I talked about that earlier. And so to preserve the protection of the copyright, there was I guess in government terms, you'd call it a SCIF, a secure area where you kind of go in and it's eyes only and you kind of look at sensitive documents. So we did our AA equivalent of that. There was a designated room, no cell phones, no recording devices, but delegates could make notes, and some of the delegates made very detailed notes and shared those, which was great. And then a sharing session was held at the conference, and people's first impressions were very positive. And even those that expressed some reservations did say that they liked the way that the project was developing. Then, after that conference in 2023, the other chapters the input of the conference was then reflected in chapters 1 through 6, and then the remaining chapters were translated: Dr. Bob's Nightmare, the appendices, which I've already talked about. And so all that last year went to the General Service Conference in 2024. And again, we had a reading room, and this time everyone got the opportunity to read the entire book, the entire translation. And why did we do that? Because we have rotation, of course, right? So some of the delegates there had not been able to read chapters 1 through 6 already. So we set up the reading rooms. I was one of the monitors. They were early in the morning, and I was one of the monitors for one of the sessions. I made notes on my iPhone because I was curious, because I think we gave people an hour and a half or 2 hours to review the book, and there was some discussion whether that was long enough. And what I noticed was that for the vast majority of delegates, it was, because they had all left before. There was three people left when the time expired. So an advisory action was passed last year that we publish the Plain Language Big Book with minor editorial changes to include the relocation of the AA steps table to an appendix, and I'll talk about that now. So in the book, we have the 12 steps, and then we have a plain language explanation side by side. And originally, that was in the front part of the book in chapter 5, and the conference felt that should be an appendix. And in the plain language version, we should have the steps as written without an explanation. So that was something that was done. In addition, to replace references to addiction or addicted in the text, that wasn't done. and we found out about it pretty quickly because that was an error that was made. So when the Plain Language Big Book was published on November the 1st last year, it was noted that those references to addiction had not been expunged. So we met very promptly, and went through all the stages to ensure that those corrections were made and that that those were reflected in the second printing. Because the first printing was 70,000 copies, and that sold out in 2 weeks. A second printing happened at the beginning of January this year with those corrections. 100,000 were printed. We've already sold 50,000 of those. And so a third printing of 50,000 is now on order so that we don't run out. So that's 1 through 12. Hooray. So that's from idea to publication. So how are we doing on time? Good. We're doing great on time. Before we do the Q&A, I just kind of would like to kind of, you know, a few key takeaways, I think, for me from this process was that it was an 8-year process. A lot of research, consultation, and discussion. And because we have this beautiful tradition of rotation, it's not a capital T tradition, a small T tradition of rotation in AA, I went back and calculated just how many sets of eyes had been on this project and then, you know, over the lifespan of it. And I worked out on the back of an envelope that there were probably around 600 pairs of eyes that had in some way been on this project. And I say that not to impress you, but to also express some humility about that, because even 600 pairs of eyes wouldn't have caught everything, wouldn't have seen everything. It was just 600 pairs of eyes of trusted servants, that's all. Throughout, I know it's been my attitude and it's been the attitude of everyone that I've had the privilege of serving with in this project, that this tool is not intended to replace our basic text. It is meant there to it is meant to complement it, and that is clear. You know, if you read the foreword and the jacket notes for the Plain Language Big Book, that point is reinforced. But again, we have this upside down triangle. So even though we can state these things and let people know what our intention is, it's up to all of you. It's up to your groups in terms of what and how and if they utilize this new tool. So that's really the question that we're at now, which is like, what next? But before we get there, I think now would be a good time for questions and answers on how we got here, if anyone has any questions. Yes. Yes, thank you. The question was about removing the references to addiction. And the thought process there. This was something that came up on the floor of the conference when we were discussing whether or not to pass the advisory action to publish the Plain Language Big Book, because it was noticed that there were some references. And the best of my recollection of the conference, the conversation centered around our primary purpose not being all things to all people, but being very clear that we have found a solution to the illness of alcoholism. That said, and one of the references was in that there was a term addiction in the glossary, so we took that out. That's one of the other things we added to the Plain Language Big Book, was a glossary at the beginning. There was unfortunately a reference slap bang in the middle of how it works, so it couldn't have been in a worse place. That got the heave-ho pretty quickly. And then there were a couple of others, but some of them, it was very hard for us to take out because they were references to the town's hospital, which was the town's hospital for alcoholism and addiction. So we weren't able to arbitrarily change the name of the hospital. So that one, excuse me, stayed in. I hope that answers your question. At the back. You'll have to speak up. Oh, you want to come to the microphone or speak up? Oh, great. I can hear you. I'm hard of hearing.
I heard that this was a fifth grade education book. So what education book is our blue book?
Oh.
And then my other question would be, how long ago did they actually start the voting to approve this new book to get out to us? How long has it taken before it finally got released? And do we know the writer that is a non-alcoholic, did I hear?
Correct.
Okay. Do we know his name?
There were three questions there. One was about the name of the writer, one was about the voting process, and the other was about the reading age of the current big book. I can tell you with certainty that we will never know the identity of the writer, and that was a decision that was taken that it was best for them, for everyone concerned, for them to remain anonymous. In terms of the voting process, the voting around this current edition started back in 2016 when we voted at the conference to start looking into this, and then the votes obviously evolved as the project took shape. So in 2021, the vote took place to actually produce a draft, and in 2024, after looking at the work in progress, the vote was taken to approve the draft. The current reading age for the big book, someone here might know that, I'm blanking, but I think it's fairly, I mean, it's if it's not college level, it's just below, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
My question is, why was there security? Why around approving the meeting? When it was all done, there was so much security around the security of the motion. Why was that?
Great. The question, thank you for the question. The question was around, why the security around reading the drafts of the plain language big book. And the concern was from our publishing department at our general service office, and they were concerned that if pieces of the plain language big book leaked out, we wouldn't then be able to assert copyright because we wouldn't have first use. That's as best I can distill. It's a legal issue. But that's as best as I can distill it in plain language. How about that? At the back. Thank you for the question. That's an excellent question. The question was, is this, excuse me, is this plain language version just in English, and will it stay just in English, I think? So we talked about this, and we talked to the plain language experts, and their advice to us was that you can't really translate plain language into plain language, plain language English into plain language Spanish. What you would have to do is start with the original text in Spanish or French, and then distill the plain language from that. So I'm guessing that's going to be a future proposed agenda topic to create a plain language book, big book in French and Spanish. But yeah, it's not as simple as just translating the English plain language into another language. Hope that answers your question. Yes.
I guess in follow up to his question, which I also was very curious about, how many people English speaking do you reach out to? Is it internationally or is it just based here in the United States?
Great question. And the question is, did we reach out to folks internationally or just in the United States? So this item is in the purview of the general service structure for the US and Canada. That is our general service structure, and it's a trilingual structure. We, from the general service office and from the Grapevine and others, we try to produce materials in all three languages. The reason the Grapevine only does English and Spanish is because there is a French magazine called La Vigne, which is produced by people in Quebec. So we don't translate Grapevine material. We do translate Grapevine books into French, but we don't have a French magazine. We have an English Grapevine and a Spanish La Vigne. The point is a really good one, because we are US-Canada. And so everyone who's had eyes on this or has voted on versions of this and in the process have been members of the fellowship from the US and Canada. Of course, this book is translated into many other languages and used by, you know, as best we can tell, around 500,000 other members of our fellowship around the globe. That has not happened. But I am sure we will hear back, as we do, from other service structures around the world. And this, to be honest, this is a source of some tension in AA, right, is that US-Canada does stuff and then the rest of the world are like, well, what about us? Why didn't you consult with us? And that's a legitimate question. But we're also constrained because we are the US-Canada service structure we serve the US-Canada fellowship. So there's an interesting tension there. As our third concept reminds us with our right of decision, that doesn't absolve us from the duty of consulting and of reporting either. So thank you for the question. It's a kind of an open one. Yeah.
I know this is about the plain language book, but it just came to me. So I don't speak Spanish, and I don't read Lovinia, and I don't know about the French one, so okay, and I don't speak French. Are the stories there then conducive to that particular group of people? And they're different, obviously, than the Grapevine, but is it like for their culture and directed to their culture? I'm not sure because I've never Spanish.
Right. The question was about the stories in the back of the big book.
The Grapevine.
Oh, the Grapevine.
I know it's a big book, but the Grapevine.
The Grapevine content comes from the fellowship in the US and Canada. The content for the La Vigne is by Spanish-speaking members for Spanish-speaking members. So La Vigne is not a translation of the Grapevine, it's its own separate publication. And I believe the same is for La Vigne as well.
I have a question. You were talking about I'm talking about transparency. And don't we have a trustee at large? Do they go out to other countries, to other service structures, and let them know what we're doing? So we're not hiding we're doing this, but we're letting you know that this has happened. Because I think that's happened with the preamble. When the preamble was changed, everybody and other service structures were really angry with this, quote unquote. But it's the same thing. Are we doing our job as being transparent with our trust? Is it the trustee at large that goes over? Are we being transparent with that person?
Thank you for the question. And the question was, are we being transparent with the other service structures via our trustees at large? And the answer is yes. We have a trustee at large for Canada. His name is Robert, who likes to remind us when we meet that we're meeting according to Robert's Rules of Order. And that joke never tires. And our U.S. trustee at large is Marita from, she lives in Nevada now, I believe, but from Southern California originally. And Marita rotates this year. So we'd be electing a new U.S. trustee at large at the conference this year. And our nominee from our area is Jennifer B. But yes, so there is a World Service meeting that occurs every 2 years. And it's at that meeting and others, because our U.S. trustees at large, although they're U.S. trustees at large, they're, a lot of their responsibilities are visiting the other service structures around the world. And so there is a process, thank you for the question, of transparency. They let them know what's going on in the fellowship here, what things are coming before the conference, and so on. So there is definitely dialogue and information flowing. Thank you for the question. Yes?
Sorry, I may have missed this, but where did the original suggestion come from for the plain language? Was it general service, or was it a specific group?
That's a really great question. The question was, where did the request originally come from? The request, originally, there was a request that came from Area 79, which is British Columbia, Yukon. Someone there. And the first time it came around, the conference decided to take no action. But then it kind of surfaced again, and I forget which, I have to look back and see what the origin was, but I know that it came up as a proposed agenda item to be looked at again. And just so folks know, the way that items get to be on the agenda for the conference is that proposed agenda items are suggested. These items can come in a number of different ways. They can come from through our upside down triangle group, district, area, delegate, conference. When things come through that funnel, there's a lot of review and different sets of eyes and perspectives, and so the idea when it gets to the bottom of the triangle is generally better thought out. I'll just say that. Individuals can suggest proposed agenda items. Individual groups can. And also the items can come out of one of the service corporations, the Grapevine or AAWS, or the trustees themselves might decide there is an item that should be on the agenda. So there's a variety of different ways that these agenda items can arise. But I will look into that, thank you, and look back and see what the origin of that agenda topic was. Thank you. Yes. So, thank you for the question. Can you just say those three things again?
Your favorite, a funniest story, or a frustrating process?
A favorite, funny, frustrating. Okay, three Fs. I wouldn't say any of it was frustrating. It might have been frustrating to my ego at various points, but that's not really frustrating. That's just my ego. Fortunately, because of our program of a Design for Living, I'm able to spot that. And it's like, all right, there's that again. So there was some of that. Funny. I'm trying to remember when we laughed. I'd have to say, at least according to my memory, which could be faulty, there was a lack of Rule 62. at play. I think because we all realize just the enormity and the seriousness and the importance of this work. And then the fun part, as I mentioned, the committee that I served on, we got to take a really good look at the back matter. And it might come as a surprise to some of you to learn that I'm a general service nerd. And the back matter is thrilling to me. The appendices, particularly. And particularly a plain language version of the 12 concepts. That was the funnest part for me. Yes, nice.
The question I have is that it's advertised as being an not an alternative to the big book, but an aid, a tool to use while working with it. So, but that suggests to me that a newcomer would only use that in relation to work with their sponsor about the big book itself. We wouldn't be handing the plain language big book to a newcomer as the first document. Whereas now we give them a big book at a meeting.
So the question was, if this is indeed intended as a tool to comprehend the big book, we wouldn't necessarily be handing just the plain language big book to a newcomer, and that newcomer would hopefully work with a sponsor, and if they found this book to be useful, they would be using the two books in tandem. I can say that is the intent of the book. But again, because the people that I serve with and I sit at the bottom of that upside down triangle, we're very aware that we serve and we don't direct and we don't govern, and that each group will have its own group conscience around this under tradition 4, and providing it's their group conscience and they don't try and transmit that to other groups or AA as a whole, then their group conscience is supreme under the second tradition. All we can do is say this is what was intended, this is the hoped for purpose, and this is the process that brought us here.
Have you used it yet with a sponsor?
Have I used it yet with a sponsee? The answer is, and the reason I'm hesitant is because just a little backstory about me. I regard the relationships that I have with the people that I work with as sacred and sacred space. And so I'm very reluctant to talk about, even in general terms, how or what we might be working on. So without betraying any confidences, I think I can say yes. And leave it at that. Yes.
So, Lynell Bollock, and being that I do archiving, just to let everybody know in the room that this is an error book that has errors in it, and the second edition that's coming out will not have those same errors in it. So if you're a collectible or know about the first edition, you've ever tried to look that up and see what it looks like and how much it is, save your books and write a different one. So that it will be prestige when you get ready to turn around in 50 years as the first edition.
Thank you. I have a first printing, and I actually marked mine up with the corrections that were made, and on those corrections, it's always disappointing when something like that happens in AA, right? It's like, what happened? That question is being pursued and asked, because it's not the first time this has happened, and we have to have better processes in place around proofing and so on to ensure that or at least, you know, reduce as far as we can the risk that these unfortunate errors take place.
We're printing, which takes time to print, and then we have to change it. Have we considered more electronic? Because you can change it faster.
Have we considered what, sorry?
Using it electronically, like using,
oh,
instead of printing these books, mm-hmm, just having our books, our information on electronic.
Right. So the question is, instead of printing, or in addition to printing, do we have these things electronically? And the answer is yes. We do have the plain language big book available in digital form. And of course, when it's digital, we can update it, you know, immediately. We have a fellowship that has a hunger and a need and a thirst for print. And so print is here at least for the foreseeable future. You know, and as an allegory to that, people say, oh, are we going to continue printing the grapevine, putting my grapevine hat on? And the answer is yes. I think there will always be a need for print with our materials, because not everyone has digital access, and we go to places where there is no digital access for people, and it's important that we be able to have print in our hands. One of the most moving stories I ever heard was at the National Corrections Conference that I attended, which was in Oklahoma City, and somebody was sharing there that as a person who had been incarcerated during lockdown and there were no meetings coming in, the only thing that came in that was their link with sobriety was their printed copy of Lavinia.
Yeah, thank you, Teddy, for your insights you're sharing with us today on this. I have one that's more about where you think we might go from here. And I'm asking really for your opinion on this. What we have today is a translation of exactly what was written in the original text in plain language. It was not modernized, meaning like if you look at chapters such as to the employee or the medical opinion on AA, that's still basically conveying the same message that came from the original text. So my question to you is, do you think that this plain language version will at some point be suitable to modernize what would be, you know, current cultural norms of things like what's the message to the employer? Or do you think we still need a different text to accomplish that?
So thank you for the question. The question was, will there come a point at which the plain language big book should be edited and updated to reflect more modern practice as it relates to workplaces and so on. I think the answer to that is again, the board and the conference is here to serve. This is a translation, and plain language is not a language, it's an approach to a language. So the term translation, you know, some people like it, some people don't. I'll leave that there. But the intent is to translate, not to, and also in accordance with the advisory action to make relatable and accessible. So you would see some of those changes. So although the content of the chapter hasn't changed as much, it's to partners, not to wives. That would be an example of the relatability and accessibility. But it is, of itself, supposed to be a translation. So if there were to be any updates, they would have to be to the original text. And may come as no secret to you here, we get those requests all the time. And we get requests all the time to say, no, stop, take it back. No, stop, take it forward. And so what we look for, I think I can say this, what we look for is when we can satisfy ourselves that there is a widely expressed need within the fellowship. That's what we look for, right? If it's just Teddy saying, you know, you need to do this and that, no one's going to pay any attention, thankfully. But if, you know, a region or several different areas all across the country are all sending in proposed agenda topics that are more or less the same, that's something we'll pay attention to. It's like, oh, this is evidence of a widely expressed need. And not that we express any opinion as to the merits of that, just noticing that it's a widely expressed need, and therefore it is something that the conference should take a look at, and then the conference decides. I hope that answers your question. Yes.
Michelle, again, sorry for being not reminding over here, but I have a quick question about whether the Big Book Dictionary, that's also consulted in the process of defining what's in here now.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of that. Could you repeat it? I'm so sorry. There was some ambient noise. I have to explain. I'm hard of hearing, and I use hearing aids, but they don't necessarily pick up everything.
Was the Big Book Dictionary also used in the process with the Big Book?
The Big Book Dictionary. That's not conference approved literature, right? So I think that's the answer. I think that's the answer, is that, you know, we wouldn't have looked at other things like that in the process, because it wasn't conference approved. And by the way, that term conference approved really means it's just conference approved.
Yeah.
it's not conference directed, it's not conference mandated, it's just conference approved. So basically it means it's gone through a thorough process. That brings us quite wonderfully back on schedule to the next part of our agenda, which I think I will hand over to Donna.